Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to E-Electric Leftovers. My name is Jason. This is episode 429, coming to you from the Groove Machine Dome Studios. We're not in the house this week because I've been out here doing some work. Had some plumbing to do. And did I film it for you? You bet I did. When will you see that? I have no idea. I don't know what the next upload day is going to be, but you can bet. Plumbing's going to be a thing. It is very windy and very stormy today, so if you hear a lot of creaking and shaking and all that, I will currently be on the way to Oz. And there's nothing you can do about that. You just got to manage it as best you can, you know? Welcome to the show this week. We have got some new Final Fantasy Tactics making our way through the deep dungeon ever and onward. We have wrapped up Blasto. Thank the heavens. And if you joined us for Monday night's stream, then you will have seen some trailers for the video games we're going to be streaming next. And if you have not seen that, please go visit my YouTube channel. Check those out and leave me a comment. Vote on the game you would most like to see done. And we will start that one Monday after this stream. I'll tally up the votes at the end of the day Sunday, and that's where we will pick up from there. Anything else for you? Oh, we're going to read some reviews for Guardian Legend. We're going to take a look at Gunsmoke. Weird news. We've got a new weekly Warren and a interesting made-for-TV movie starring some incredible actors. Absolutely incredible performances in a movie that, not going to lie, brings me a great deal of comfort while making other people just existentially sad. I don't know what that says about me or anybody else, but there you go. Gunsmoke by Capcom takes you back to the days of the Gold Rush to a small, bustling mine town of the Old West. Ruthless gold-stealing bandits are terrorizing the townsfolk, and it's up to you to stop them. The thieves are notorious killers, and when they challenge you to a draw, they're playing for keeps. Although your gunslinging prowess is legendary, this may be the toughest high noon you'll ever face. But you've got to stand your ground. This town ain't big enough for both you and them. Both of us is better, but you and them is what it says. This is Gunsmoke, a vertical scrolling shooter for Capcom, released in 1988. Originally an arcade game ported over to a bunch of things, the NES, the Famicom, the MSX, the Commodore, I think the Amstrad, and even that good old ZX Spectrum. One of the first games that we had when we had our NES was Gunsmoke here. I remember playing it quite a bit. It's unique. It's a little different, not just in terms of being one of the rare, at the time and even now, Western-themed video games, but had a unique little control style. You push one button to shoot that way. You push the other button, you'll shoot that way. You push them both at the same time, you shoot both guns right in front of you. kind of the ZTR turning maneuver of video games, but not like Katamari does it. Wait, you walk forward and you keep walking forward until you can't walk forward no more in this game. It's kind of like that book, The Long Walk. Anyway, fantastic game. Really good music, decent amount of challenge, good graphics. I can't complain about Gunsmoke one bit, and neither should you. It is review time, ladies and gentlemen. We have one of our regular contributors, so let's go ahead and start with Horror Spooky in 2015 saying another generic space shooter on the NES. I don't know if I could agree with that so far, Horror Spooky, but let's find out. Sci-fi shooters on the NES are a dime a dozen. The Guardian Legend at least has an original premise to bring to the table, but the gameplay is largely uninspiring and rarely anything special or worth getting excited about. The Guardian Legend stitches together two different shooter genres. The first is a more traditional shoot 'em up, not quite a bullet hell, but of similar design. The main character is a female robot warrior meant to protect Earth or something, and she can transform into a spaceship. When in spaceship form, this is what the gameplay segments are like. These sections are painfully generic and annoying, with boring, uninspired level design. The other half of the coin is a top-down shooter. During these segments, you are controlling the main character when she is in her humanoid form. These are somewhat less boring and generic as the spaceship segments, but there's still nothing exciting. The graphics are comprised mainly of generic sci-fi art styles that were used endlessly on the NES. The music is alright, but the sound effects are, again, very generic. I can't stress how generic this game is from a gameplay standpoint, regardless of its outlandish premise. Didn't he say the premise was original? It's outlandish and original, I guess. I've been playing and reviewing a ton of NES games lately, and they mainly get their replayability from having password systems that can change the game or allow you to skip around the levels. This is especially important in these old NES titles, as a lot of people, simply don't have the skill or are unwilling to commit the time necessary to master these games to get to some of the levels. These passwords let people experience later levels in the game even if they aren't able to get there themselves. I tend to mess around with cheat codes after beating the game, and I have to say the Guardian Legend has a terrible password system. The passwords require you to put in huge chunks of letters crammed together, capital and lowercase, and it's honestly not even worth the time to bother. The Guardian Legend has left me disappointed. It has a cool premise, which is original and outlandish, but otherwise is a generic, boring space shooter that are a dime a dozen on the NES. It attempts to stitch together two different takes on the classic shooter genre and doesn't really do either sub-genre justice. It's a jack-of-all-trades, master of none, and a classic example of that phrase. Recycling Paragraphs, Horror Spooky, gives it a 3. I can't say I agree with you, Horror Spooky, on a couple of things. I can see why you would be a little bored with it, but we'll get back to that. We have no other regular contributors. Let's move on to this one. Magician Type Zero in 2002 says, "This game isn't all it's cracked up to be." Oh dear. They begin. Gameplay, 5 out of 10. The gameplay here is pretty simple of what regular RPGs tend to be like. You don't have to swap around many weapons, and you never have to swap around your shield or magic items because they don't exist. This game simply revolves around 1. Moving, and 2. Attacking. If you enjoy simple stuff, then you'll like it. However, I like for the gameplay to be more complex. I want there to be more options and combinations for me to choose from. I think that's near the heart of the RPG. Well, here, you don't get it. It's stripped away. Gone. Only mediocre, in my honest opinion. Why did you get a shooter and then pretend it's an RPG? Spoiler alert, this ain't the first time or last time he's going to compare a action shooter adventure game to an RPG. Story, 4 out of 10. The story here is kind of lame. All it's about is going along and defeating what's inside these seals to make this computer self-destruct. I don't think it's very creative, and I think it could be changed in some way. I'd like it to be more complex, and to challenge my mind. I'd also like it for be to be more interesting. This whole health destruction thing in going RPGs is getting quite a bit old. Well, they tried. They didn't succeed. Again, Magician Type Zero, we're going to do a deep dive into you. Why are you playing a not RPG and then saying it's an you want it to be more like an RPG? Maybe you should have played an RPG. Audio and video, 4 out of 10. Well, the audio here is alright, but it seems like it could be developed a bit more. All I hear is the same techno tune with a million remixes. Did you play this game? I don't think Magician Type Zero played the Guardian Legend. I think he reviewed it. I don't think he played it. It all sounds similar, but it's not what I'm looking for in an RPG, which, again, this is not. I'm looking for there to be excitement, and I want my mood to change with each scene or level that advances. I want it to totally grab me and change how I feel. Unfortunately, it doesn't. The video, on the other hand, is a bit better. The graphics are decent for the early Nintendo Entertainment System, and I think that they were developed as well as they could have been for the story. Not bad, but nothing great. Has he mentioned anything? Specifics. He mentioned the self-destruct thing. Replayability, 3 out of 10. You could play this game maybe once in a while. However, this a span of maybe even a year or so. I'm going to read those again, punctuation included. You could replay this game maybe once in a while, period. However, comma, this a span of maybe even a year or so, period. Even while playing the game, comma, I feel it's too repetitive, period. After I break one seal, comma, I have to go straight to the next, period. All boring and dry, period. Well, comma, what do you do, period. Ouch, what do you do? Nobody tell him about Zelda, okay? All you do, I get a Triforce piece, and then I just gotta go get another one. It's so boring in my RPG. Buy or rent? Rent. This game is definitely a rent. It's so repetitive, you might want to return it before you're done with it. That's usually how renting works. This game isn't exactly fast, but with a good walkthrough, I think you can do it. It's a decent game, and if you're just renting a game to rent, this is a good pick for your ideal average rental. Your average rental. This isn't a special rental, ladies and gentlemen. Final thoughts. I think this game is just average. It's decent, but I wouldn't purchase it. There are very few options for you to choose from, and it's very repetitive. However, if you like games like that, then go for it. Else, steer clear. In an RPG, you're in control. You're playing the role. You know you need choices, and unfortunately, this game is lacking them. Well, if this game were an RPG, Magician Type Zero, you would probably have a leg to stand on, but you gave it a 4, and I don't think you understood what you were doing. Like, there's no examples. It's like, this game isn't an RPG. Typey. Dear Internet, it's me, Margaret. I rented Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles 1, and it's not as an RPG like I wanted. So this game is a 4. I rented Anticipation. I rented Pinbot. Not an RPG, 2 stars. We'll get into what's his face here. One more. Oh, hell, this one. It's all in the chips, says Dark Fury 3827. Wow, there were 3,826 Dark Furies before this guy. Reviewed in 2006. I am pleased to be able to submit a review on one of my favorite games of all time. Well, we're pleased to read it. There might be some personal bias stemming from playing it as a little kid, but there's nothing that warms my heart more than a tough battle through hordes of monsters on the NES. Maybe that's a little exaggeration. Let's go over why this is such a great game, shall we? Oh, yes. Let's shall. First off, there is a break in the repetition. There are 2 modes of play, an overhead view and a spaceship, in quotes, view. The overhead view is really a view. The spaceship view is not really a view. It's not even a view to a kill. The overhead view is designed to operate much like the original Legend of Zelda. You move from screen to screen, unrestricted from a linear path that must be taken. As the Guardian Legend, you are free to explore and make your character powerful by finding secrets and power-ups spread throughout the world. Or not. We are not the Guardian. We are the Guardian Legend. The spaceship mode is more restrictive, but it has to be. You fly down long corridors chocked with enemies, and it becomes almost a 2D Star Fox. This is by far what lends to the challenge within the game, because there seems to be no limit to the ridiculous number of enemies present on screen at any point in time. The graphics themselves are tolerable, but are painfully better within the spaceship mode, partially because the screen is passing by at an alarming rate and partially because it is easier to make a spaceship look cooler than a girl walking around with a gun in 8-bit graphics. The spaceship mode thus looks cleaner. Not only that, but many of the monsters in the spaceship mode are more impressive graphic-wise. The music? Well, now that we're spoiled by digital surround sound and all-out orchestrated soundtracks that rival the movie industry, it's hard to say that the songs are impressive. However, being a person that grew up playing this game, I find no problem with the music. In fact, I enjoy it. The music sets the mood well, and because of the many different tracks the game has, it doesn't become repetitive to hear. If you think about the original Zelda, that game had maybe 4 songs at most, which the dungeon music itself was a little more than a few notes being played over and over and over again. In fact, I'm willing to bet that the Guardian Legend has just as many different boss themes as the Legend of Zelda, not counting the different corridor and overworld themes, title themes, so on and so forth. Is the game challenging? Most definitely. I'll admit, being a veteran gamer, that this game is relatively easy for a while. However, if you refrain from running around and picking up power-ups, the game will become rough right from the get-go. This would make the end of the game nigh impossible, though, and the last several corridors and bosses are a pain enough without running in with a vastly under-equipped character. I think that was a problem I had when I Let's Played it. Besides all that, the game is complex. There is a system of character development and advancement not present in some modern-day games, which lends itself not only to a little exploration, but also goes to show the several layers that the game designers were working on when putting the game together. Because of their hard work, we gamers can sit back and enjoy the wonderful game, which I myself consider a classic that has withstood the test of time. Should you buy it? Play it? Yes. I very well think it would be worth your time. And Dark Fury 289416 Hike gave it a 9. Most people, get that out of here. Most people gave it pretty high ranks. We don't have any other regular contributors in any of the review sections, but we've got a 10, a 9, and a 6 in the detailed, 2 10s and 2 9s in the full. We read the 3 and 4, and everybody else gave it an 8 or higher. And I happen to think this game is worth an 8. Here's why. The story is a little different. It's basically like you can drop the stuff at the beginning of the story. If you pace the story out, thousands of years ago, an alien race took over the planet Naju, and Naju has now been placed on a collision course with Earth. You can take out the thousand years ago alien thing. Here's what you need to know. Naju is going to crash into Earth and you need to fix it. Well, that's Gradius, that's Abadox, that's Life Force, that's any generic space kind of shooter. So I will say it is generic in that sense. The story is not very original, but they do spice it up a little bit with that thing. Like, the planet isn't evil. The people on the planet aren't evil. The people on the planet are dead. Once upon a time, everybody died. The end. But that's not the end. Once upon a time, everybody died, and then these jerks took their house and threw it at you. That's how this game starts. That's a little different. I think it makes it unique enough. And I think... We'll talk about this in a second. I think that makes it a little more unique than just your standard old go save the princess thing. You know what I mean? When it comes to the gameplay segments, you do start out with the top-down shooter. This being developed by Compile, that segment is really good. They were really, really good at those top-down shooters. Gunnak, one of the finest top-down shooters on any home console system. I will say that without hesitation. Also made by Compile. And this top-down shootery kind of thing absolutely has similarities to Gunnak. Fantastic game. Fantastic game. And the top-down shooter segments are really damn good. They're really good for a couple of reasons. You move very well. That's one. That's very important in a top-down shooter when you will have 15 things flying at you at the same time. And 15 sounds like a lot, because most shooters on the NES didn't have 15 things they could throw at you. 15 is an underestimation for the later stages. There could be 20 or 30 things, bullets, ships, other things, flying at you, trying to make you die before you make them die. That's impressive on the NES. Another thing that's impressive is the backgrounds. The backgrounds in the shooting segments are very generic. They're very bland. I'm going to go back to what was it, Horror Spooky. The backgrounds are not terribly interesting, but you move so freaking fast. They scroll incredibly fast. It makes you feel like you're going 87,000 miles an hour. You don't have time to look at the backgrounds because you're going so fast and you're trying to avoid getting killed. It's very impressive that they managed to do all of that with the hardware that they had available. The bosses and the enemies in the flying segments are a little more interesting than the enemies in the, I guess, mini bosses in the top-down segments, because there's not really bosses in the top-down segments like there are in Fester's Quest and Blaster Master, the two games that I most compare the top-down segments to. Gremlins too, a little bit, I guess. They are a little more detailed. They're a little bigger. Well, maybe they're not even bigger. You're smaller. So it makes them look bigger and more impressive. But for the most part, there's a couple of really overused... We get a lot of palette swaps, which isn't great. But the bosses are hard. They don't start out hard, but they get hard. You can, with your regular shot, destroy most projectiles that are coming at you. You can't do that with all of them, though. And later on, the bosses start shooting a lot of things at you that you can't do anything about other than avoid, while the boss themselves is trying to ram into you, and it's bad. It's bad. You do have a health bar in the shooting segments, but it will drain super fast if you're not careful, to the point where you may as well not even have one. The top-down segments, much more exploration-based. Like we talked about in one of the reviews, you do have the option to wander around to your heart's content and find different pieces of equipment to upgrade yourself. There's a ton of sub-weapons. I think there's like 15 maybe not quite that many, 15 different sub-weapons to pick from. You can level up and increase your health bar, which increases your gun and increases your firepower. So there's a ton of that. But something, rewind a little bit, that I mentioned in the opening, is when you get into the planet for the first time, you're greeted with this large computer screen that's just full of text. And that computer screen full of text is the last journal entry from the last survivor of Naju telling you what's going on and what you need to do to stop it. And occasionally throughout the game, you'll find another room with another one of these screens, and that same individual has left another journal entry that says, to unlock the, you know, basically it says, look, I kept these corridors locked so the monsters couldn't get in and ruin things, right? For the most part, there's monsters in them. We ignore them. They're not as smart as the other monsters, I guess. I don't know. They don't have thumbs. So he's like, to open the corridor here, I set a puzzle where you have to do this thing. And it doesn't come right out and say you need to turn around 3 times and then put your finger on the tip of your nose and sing the lyrics to I'm a Tugboat, Call Me Mel. There's nothing like that. It's, just shoot it. Shoot it and the door will open. Set a bomb and the door will open. Don't look at the door long enough and the door will open. So it's not always just you go into the corridor, boom, there it is. You go in, you do the thing. So the game does encourage a little exploration so you can get the power up so you don't die as much. Works pretty well, I think. He said there's no bosses in the top-down thing. There are shops with the mascot for Compile, the Blue Lander, which is just a blue circle with little blue circles for feet. Kind of think a Kirby looking thing. Big ol' happy smile. Blue Lander shows up in a lot of Compile games. And you usually collect him or the red variant for points. And he's in this game and he operates a shop and a couple of other things. No bosses in the top down, but there are some sub-bosses. You might turn around and get into a screen and then an alarm will sound. And if you don't get out really quick, the walls will close in. You'll be trapped and you have to fight this boss to get out. Bosses almost always drop something good. So it's really worth your benefit to try and fight them. But, you know, you do what you want to do with it. That's what you do with it. The game does get very hard in the later stages, both the top-down shooting and the exploration stage. You end up with a ton of enemies on screen. They do a ton of damage. If you're not ready, you're not going to be able to do enough damage to them, and then it just ends up being a run around, try to not get killed situation, which is never fun to be in a video game. So try and avoid that. Musically, I think the music in this game is great. You guys only heard basically like the first 2 areas. There's so much more good music, and it just wasn't like, I'm going to pick this one and this one and this one. There were too many to pick from. So I just went with the most likely that you will encounter early on in the game. But I promise, the rest of the music, very good. Very, very good. Control-wise is great. Graphics, I think the graphics are fine. I think the top-down segments are a little boring just because it is very samey. Again, akin to your Fester's quests and your Blaster Masters. But we're doing something with this game that I don't think it was really like, oh, we'll be able to do this on this new Nintendo machine. It'll be great. So I think the creativity of the game devs really shines through in being able to put in 2 different types of gameplay into an NES game. And other games have done it. Zexies did it, but it didn't do it like this. Zelda 2 did it. Didn't do it like this. Yeah, I just think it's a very creative game. Does it excel at any one thing? I would say probably not, but the music would be really close. I think it's different. I think it's unique. And that's weird because I do agree with Horror Spooky that some of the things it does do are so generic. But it does usual things in unusual ways. Let's say it like that. I give it a solid 8, I think. I think Guardian Legend gets an 8 from me. Well worth the play. Oh yeah, we were going to look up Magician Type 0. I forgot. Let's see. He's got some reviews. From 21 years ago. He gave Atari's Adventure, you know, good old Adventure, he gave it a 4. A couple of GameCube games. Crystalis was good enough to get a 10. Guardian Legend got a 4. Jeopardy 25th Anniversary Edition. He says, if you're 12 or younger, don't touch it. Nintendo 64, Disney, Pixar, Toy Story 2, Buzz Lightyear to the Rescue is the only person to have played that game on the planet. That got a 4. X-Men Mutant Academy on the PlayStation got an 8. And for the PS2, DDR Max, Dance Dance Revolution, he says it's the closest to the arcade yet, and gave it a 10. That was also his last review in 2003. Yeah, kind of all over the place. Adventure got a 4. Dr. Wily's Revenge got a 5, probably because it's not an RPG. Roger Clemens' MVP Baseball for the Game Boy got a 5, same reason. Batman Vengeance got a 9, so it must have RPG elements. Simpsons Bartman Meets Radioactive Man only got a 2. He says it could have worked. If you rated something a 2 out of 10, would that be your summation? It could have worked. I think, Magician, you're a fool. Ladies and gentlemen, now watch this. Ham is blind and unable to stand. Clove is his servant, is unable to sit. Nag and Nell are his father and mother, who are legless and live in dustbins. Together, they live in a room with two windows, but there may be nothing outside at all. This is Endgame, written by Samuel Beckett, a made-for-TV film, came out in 2000. It's about an hour and a half long, stars the phenomenal and recently departed Michael Gambon, David Thewlis, I believe I'm saying his name right. I don't know that I've ever heard anybody say his name, and Gene Anderson. Michael and David are easily recognizable from many, many, many things. Michael was in, I know he's in Life Aquatic, Steve Zissou movie. I think he was one of the Harry Potters. I think he's who they got to play Dumbledore after, what's his name, died, maybe? I don't remember. A lot of great movies, though. A lot of great movies. Big, big fan of him. And David Thewlis, he's in a lot of very good movies as well. In fact, I just watched one that I didn't know he was in the other day. I'll look it up real quick. Where is it? He's been in too many things. I'm never going to be able to find it. He's in Fargo, Wonder Woman, Macbeth, Theory of Everything. What the hell is this movie called? Ladies and gentlemen? I'm never going to be able to find it. I should just quit now. Quit while I'm ahead. It was Stonehurst Asylum, something like that. Very good movie, and he was good in it. It was him and what the hell is that guy's name? I'm doing terrible. I'm bad with names today. Ben Kingsley. Very good movie. Would recommend that one. But we're not talking about that. We're talking about Endgame here. Endgame play written by Samuel Beckett, who I just about a year ago really started to kind of deep dive into. I think it's fantastic. It's only 4 people. I've heard it heard people trying to kind of say what it's about, and Beckett was very good about never telling you what anything was about. I think this is, it's relationships. It's dealing with relationships. It's dealing with death. It's dealing with not knowing and how you deal with not knowing. And I think it's phenomenal. As I said in the opening, I watch this and I get some small bit of comfort from it, which, as weird as that is, it's true. Look it up on YouTube. It is available. There's a couple different versions. They're both good. This one is my favorite. Time for news, ladies and gentlemen, and we've got some here on a little screen in front of me, so we're going to read it. That is how I planned this segment to work. And so far, 10 out of 10. Our lead story, wait, what? Deputy Chief Physician of Pediatric Neurosurgery. Into Tom Brokaw for a second. Dr. Li at Hangzhou Children's Hospital in China shared a video on social media on March 11th after a baby boy was born sporting a 4-inch long tail, WION reported. Why on? The doctor suspected a condition called a tethered spinal cord, which means the spinal cord is abnormally connected to surrounding tissues, typically at the base of the spine. Doctors advised against removing the tail, as doing so might reverse an irreversible damage to his tail, probably. Kid's gonna get made fun of. Sometimes you gotta make those decisions. Precocious, ladies and gentlemen, three boys, aged 11, 12, and 16, were taken into custody on March 19th after they robbed a Wells Fargo bank in Houston on March 15th, KTRK-TV reported. K-Track TV. The kids handed a threatening note to a bank teller. The Harris County Sheriff's Office believes they were armed, but they did not present a weapon. After the FBI released surveillance footage, parents of two of the boys identified them. The, quote, little rascals, as they've been dubbed. No, the little rascals did not rob banks. They had, like, go-kart races and played stickball, chased hoops with sticks. They're facing second-degree felony charges. The age of the younger two, that's unusual for a bank robbery, noted Michael Schneider, a retired juvenile district court judge. Why did we even go to him for a comment? Yep, boys that age, that ain't right. Repeat offender, a 23-year-old Frenchman, will get to stay a little longer in Norway than he anticipated after racking up 25 speeding tickets in just 19 days, Yahoo News reported. The Oslo District Court called the speeder a danger in traffic and sentenced him to 24 days in prison, which was reduced to 21 days when he pleaded guilty. Why even plead guilty at that point? It's 3 days. Take the free food. Most of the infractions were caught on fixed speed cameras, which the driver was unaware of. He was also relieved of his driver's license. That's great for Norway. What happens when he goes back? Great art. Mexican artist Chavez Marmol, 42, carved a giant head from stone inspired by the carvings of the Olmec people and then lowered it onto a used Tesla 3 using a crane, France 24 reported. Why is France reporting about the Mexican statue guy and not the imprisonment of one of its citizens? The art installation in a vacant lot in Mexico City was intended to troll Elon Musk, said the artist. Look what I did to your lousy car with this wonderful head. This is bigger than you and the rampant technologies. Tesla has recently announced a plan to build a factory in northern Mexico. It's the wonderful thing about art. It allows you these atrocities, said Marmol. Okay. Elon Musk could not be reached for comment. He was busy having dinner with Donald Trump. Family values Alyssa Langley and Timothy Stevens, both 27, were arrested in Daytona Beach, Florida on March 16th after they both passed out on the beach, leaving their two children to wander to a nearby hotel pool, Click Orlando reported, which is weird because they were at the beach and there's a very large pool already there. When the Volusia County Sheriff's deputy asked where the children were, Stevens walked toward the ocean, calling for them and saying, "They're at the beach." He later tried to run away, but fell on the beach and appeared unconscious. He faces charges of child neglect, alcohol possession, I'm in trouble, and attempt to escape custody. Langley faces child neglect charges. The kids were unharmed. I better put this away. Anybody? Presuming that I have alcohol. There. Out of sight, out of mind. Oh, yeah. Where are we now? We're still in family values. Police in Riverside, California arrested Samuel Davalos Pasillas, 47, who claimed to be a pastor in Victorville in late March for hiring two men to kill his daughter's boyfriend, ABC 7 TV reported. I really like the breakdown of that sentence. What does it matter that he claimed to be a pastor? That has nothing to do with it. The hitmen surveilled the victim for months before the shooting, which took place on October 21st, 2023, and as the victim sat in his car, they drove up next to him and shot him, wounding him. That is probably what would happen if you got shot in the car. It's the most painful place to be shot. Police also arrested Juan Manuel Caberos, 55, of Long Beach, and they're still looking for Jesus Abel Felix Garza. The church's real pastor, Rafael Porras, told reporters that Pasillas was a volunteer, not a pastor. Again, the church was never mentioned in the story, so the pastor thing didn't need to be mentioned at all. Did he tell police he was the pastor? Did he tell the hitmen he was the pastor? Who did he tell that he was the pastor that we needed to know about? The answer, ladies and gentlemen, is nobody. It shouldn't be in the story. Moving on to Florida, the World Health Organization reported that leprosy is on the rise, particularly in Florida. Newsweek reported on March 22nd, and it couldn't happen to a nicer place. The number of infections has more than doubled in the last 10 years, and the disease is often associated with exposure to armadillos. About a fifth of the U.S. cases were reported in Florida. People may become infected from other people with untreated leprosy or from the nine-banded armadillo, a natural host of the bacteria causing the disease, said Francis Matapi, co-director of the Global Health Academy at the University of Edinburgh. You know, Edinburgh, Florida. Nine banded armadillos. Make sure before you go lick your armadillos, you count them. Count them bands. If they're nine, I wouldn't do it. If they're eight or ten, if it's an even number, I think rule of thumb, go for it. Here's a bright idea. An employee of Chithern Railways in the United Kingdom is marking the 125th birthday of the Mary LeBone Station and her own 20th anniversary with the railroad by changing her name to Rihanna Mary LeBone Kawaja. That is a lot of syllables to throw at me right now. Metro News thus reported. She said she would have made it her first name had her children not objected. What are they going to do? Ground them. The station itself is not big, but it's got a soul, she said. It's warm and welcoming. Not every London station is like that. Kawaja started in a ticket office and now works in security. I can get that, though. I can get that. Like, sometimes you just go to a place and it just feels good, you know? We had a pizza place here in town that is now under new ownership, and they changed the decor, and it's not as, I don't know, just doesn't feel as right. It's cleaner, that's for sure, but it just doesn't feel as right. I did find out today, sidebar from the news, ladies and gentlemen, there's a new bar come to town. That is, I believe, owned by a gentleman who owned one of my other favorite bars in town. And I'm going to have to go check it out. Because it's... So, sidebar again from the news. We'll come back to it. Promise. The city square here in town is a national historic place. So there's like a registry. Because it's... A lot of the buildings that are standing today were built like 150 years ago, or whatever it was, before the town was founded. And so there's a lot of really cool old buildings. This pizza place I was talking about is one of those buildings. But they have been kind of purchasing some of the abandoned ones and renovating them and turning them into office spaces or whatever. Storefronts, that kind of thing. So there's a building, and it's called the Roosevelt. It's a very hoity-toity name for our very little town. But I was driving by today, going to breakfast, on the same square where this is old. And it's, again, really cool little diner thing. But I noticed a new sign on the Roosevelt that said the Rough Rider. Like, oh, because look, ladies and gentlemen, Teddy Roosevelt is one of my favorite presidents. I think he's an incredibly interesting individual. Big fan. So the building's called the Roosevelt. The bar's called the Rough Riders. So I looked it up online, and I think it's owned by a guy who owned another business here on the square. And one I go and play music at pretty consistently during the summer. So I gotta go and check this place out. Big fan of Roosevelt. Big fan of Teddy Roosevelt. There's a quote. I don't know the whole quote, but the summation of it is, he passed away in his sleep. This is from I think it was one of his former vice presidents at the time. It says, he passed away in his sleep last night. Death had to come and take him in his sleep, because had he been awake, there would have been a fight. I like that. Anyway, back to the news. Oopsie. Not the sidebar, the news story. A woman who just wanted to watch a live stream of a funeral became a viral sensation after she accidentally left the camera on while she took a shower, the Daily Mail reported on March 21st. The Zoom broadcast was also being shown on a big screen to in-person mourners at the church in North London. The funeral was for a father of three who had died of cancer. Even worse, the woman apparently turned up at the wake later with no idea what she had done until 10 minutes later, crying her eyes out, as one mourner said. I'm all for live streaming funerals. Zoom funerals is weird, though. And did she take... Okay, she's left the camera on while she took a shower. Was the camera, like, was she captured taking the shower? Or did she, like, leave it in the other room? If she left it in the other room, no big deal. If she took it with her... Why, number one. Number two, I have many questions. I'm all for live streaming funerals, ladies and gentlemen. I think that's a nice thing to do for people who can't travel, right? I had a burial the other day, and one of the brothers, of the gentleman we buried, 80-something years old, couldn't make it. They live streamed it so he could watch it. That's very nice. I like they do that. The real reason, though, is when I'm working them, this service and I want to know when they're going to be here, I can watch the live stream for them to leave and then I can get ready. It saves me so much time. Compelling explanation. Michelle. I think Michelle. Yeah, we'll go with Michelle. Michelle Young, 46. Well, she's from Burlington, Iowa, ain't she? And she thought she was at a friend's house on March 19th, but the friend didn't answer the door. Well, what would you do? Exactly. You would do exactly what Michelle did, and you would allegedly light some items on fire on the front porch, KWQC-TV reported. She told police that she saw a sign on the porch that said, "Witches welcome," and she's a witch, so she set a fire. But she wasn't going to hurt anyone or let the fire get out of control. The homeowner, who identified Young from her surveillance camera, said she did not know her. Young was charged with reckless use of fire and possession of drug paraphernalia. You know, witches going around setting fires. That's what they're known for. Not brooms or hats or cats or any of that. They're just little firebugs. Our least competent criminal, not the 11-year-old who tried to rob the bank, oddly enough. When Daniel Algretto Jr., 19, nearly struck a parked police car with his Honda Accord in Luzerne County, Pennsylvania, on March 15th, he set off a chase that ended with his arrest, and not just for bad driving. WBRE-TV reported, The Cheese Channel. Investigators found Algretto of Freeland, Pennsylvania, was allegedly carrying 2,200 individual doses of fentanyl, 250 grams of methamphetamine, illegal steroids, cash, it's illegal to carry cash now, and materials used to process and package drugs, like baggies. He was held on a $125,000 bail. Well, now that we know alcohol, cash, and little plastic baggies are illegal, I am in big trouble. Fine points of the law. If you're going to cheat on your spouse, maybe move to New York. The AP reported on March 22nd that the seldom used law against committing adultery may be overturned in the New York legislature. Only about a dozen people have been charged of the misdemeanor crime in New York since 1972, and we've come a long way since intimate relationships between consenting adults are considered immoral, said Assemblyman Charles Levine, unless you're in a Republican state. It's a joke. Heads up, though, adultery is still a felony offense in Oklahoma, Wisconsin, and Michigan. One very red, two turning blue. We'll get on that immediately. Final story. On March 20th, a 34-year-old man went to the hospital in Guangxi Province, China, where several abdominal cramps, Oddity Central reported. He was in too much pain to talk, so doctors took an x-ray and an ultrasound where they saw something unusual in his abdomen. I would imagine so. During surgery, well, what did they see in the x-ray and ultrasound? During surgery, though, they discovered a nearly foot-long live eel. The patient was unable to explain how the eel might have gotten into his abdominal cavity, but doctors surmised that they entered his body through his anus and bit through the intestine. The patient is doing fine. Yeah, cavity, not stomach. Cavity. They're just swimming around in there. Like that movie. What is that movie? With the thing and the guy. That guy. You know the guy? You know when you want to get Timothy Oliphant and you can't get him, so you get the next best thing? That guy. Weekly Warren, and this time we are going to the album The Envoy, released in 1982, and we're going to be looking at the title track, The Envoy. Wow. The title track was inspired by the veteran American diplomat Philip Habib's shuttle diplomacy during Israeli's Lebanon incursion of 1982. Wasn't this a very successful album? Warren's quoted, "I would start a record more or less as soon as I'd finished the previous one. And they took longer, cost more and more, and did sort of less and less. Envoy was a little discouraging for him at that point. Despite the fact that Let Nothing Come Between You, a love ballad by Zevon, charted as high as number 24, Asylum dropped Zevon after the commercial failure of The Envoy. It'd be 5 years before he made another studio album in 1987 called Sentimental Hygiene, which I think is a damn fine album. We have Zevon on everything, of course. Waddy Wachtel back playing some guitar. Lee Sklar's playing bass again. Don Henley's here. Lindsey Buckingham is here. Steve Lukather is here. Jorge Calderon's back. J.D. Souther is here. Graham Nash is here. Everybody, like, how many more people do you want, man? How many more people? What I really like about this song is I like, it sounds like a spy movie almost, right? It, like, this could be a movie. This song particularly, I think, could be a movie for sure. I think it's there's just a lot of it that's really kind of fun. It's not a very happy or upbeat or bright tune, you know? Whenever there's a crisis, the president sends his envoy in, right? Guns in Damascus, oh Jerusalem. But at 1982, we're in 2024 now, so this is quite some time later. And some of the words, like, nuclear arms in the Middle East, Israel's attacking the Iraqis. The Syrians are mad at the Lebanese and Baghdad do whatever she please. Looks like another threat to world peace for the envoy. Nothing has changed in the 41 years since the song has came out. I think it's a great song. I think this album is really good. I don't know why it was, panned so badly. I'm looking at the track list. I love the envoy. The overdraft is okay. I really like the Hula Hula Boys. I really like Jesus Mentioned. Let Nothing Come Between You is really good. Ain't That Pretty At All is like I'll Sleep When I'm Dead Part 2. Charlie's Medicine is excellent. Looking for the Next Best Thing is a damn good song. And Never Too Late for Love is also a damn good song. This whole album, pretty damn good. I would absolutely recommend The Envoy. Ladies, gentlemen, everybody else, children who have robbed banks, ladies who shower during a funeral, who else? Guy with the eel? The eel. Hey, thanks for listening to the show. I do appreciate you guys listening, and I hope you enjoyed it. If you would like to, please consider leaving us a rating and a review. That would be great. That would be just so peachy keen of you. Helps people find the show. And you can tell people, share it on your social media of choice, should you so desire. Even if it's like, God, listen to this guy. Oh man, is he wrong about everything or what? I'm fine with that. I'm okay with that. You should be too. It's okay. Yes, please like, review, all that stuff. You can subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. I think we're still on all the podcast things. If you would like to check out any of the videos for games like Final Fantasy Tactics, Blasto, what are the other two? Guardian Legend and Gunsmoke. That probably got real loud. I apologize. Guardian Legend and Gunsmoke. You can find all of that and more at my website, jasonsgroovemachine.com. We did have some problems with some of the links going to the wrong places. I think I fixed them. Audiobooks. are down for a little bit. I'm going to find a new home for those. What else can I tell you? Yeah, it's all there. We've got it all on JGM.com. Not to be confused with UHF. That's different. Not that I think Weird Al would get mad at me for saying that, but, you know, that's not a fight I want to even get into. So we won't worry about that too much. Join us Mondays on Twitch, Jason's Groove Machine. I'm over there for a stream, and you can find out what we're going to be streaming next time. Well, not finding out, but if you haven't seen the video for the trailers, you can join me over there, and we'll see what everybody thinks. There's a pretty good batch of games over there, folks. I'm excited. I'm pretty excited for, I think, just about any of them to win. The one I really want, I don't think is going to, but that's okay. I'll play it on my own, and I'll have more fun than you. So there. And find me, of course, on YouTube, Jason's Groove Machine. If you would like to financially support the show, kick in a couple bucks, go over to buymeacoffee.com/electricleft, and you can kick in a couple bucks. That's what it's there for. It's a thing that you kick couples of bucks into. That's its only reason for existence. Please make its life meaningful. Okay? Thank y'all. See you next week.